Hello. Okay.
Perfect.
We're having a minute left. Hi, sorry for the delay. We were trying to figure out video recording. I'm Björn Zabe, and I'm going to talk about what I call the new world. And you will notice that it's actually two V's here, because we are talking about virtualization. So, yeah, I'll start with virtualization. I'm going to give you an idea about virtualization at the OS level of about what we have been doing, and then switch to the virtual network stack, and in the end give you a couple of use cases and numbers how things in FreeBSD could work for you. So virtualization actually is a term that became more and more popular during the last 10 years or so. But if you're thinking in terms of computers, it's actually going back to the 60s or something when they did it on the big machines. And if you're thinking of what is virtualization, I came up with it's have one real thing and say or pretend you have lots of them to different users. So I have a question. Why does virtualization not work with apples and oranges? So at first I couldn't answer it myself, so I went on, how do we do it? How does IT solve virtualization? And so a few samples for this. In networking, VLANs are popular, there are MPLS VPNs, and it's basically you've got one wire and you pretend you have multiple of them. In terms of machines, we are having one piece of hardware and run many virtual machines. In the operating system, we've been doing this for quite a while with the VM space, with VM address space, so that we pretend to processes. This is your space, but it's actually the same space for all the processes, and we just bag it somewhere else. In FreeBSD, we have been using jails, and we have SAN or VirtualBox and all those kinds as well. So how do all of those things work? Well, basically, we add a level of indirection. It's the VLAN tag, the label. It's the clue between the virtual address and the physical addresses. Or it's jails, the jail framework. It's the hypervisor for SAN that's going in there. So if you're going back to the apples and oranges, why doesn't it work there? Well, if you're going to walk into a shop and say, I want an apple, and 10 people are coming and say, I want an apple, and there's one apple, they can't tell you, hey, it's 10 apples, because if they are going to slice them into 10, it's still not going to be 10 apples anymore, because you can see this. You can't virtualize those things, really. So why are we virtualizing? We want to use our resources that we have plenty of these days, well, more efficiently. And we are doing this by pretending to people, you've got your own stuff, but we are doing it to many. So they will share even though they think they are not. This actually allows for managed overcommits, and I say managed here because if you're going to put 100% of load on a box, that's okay, but if you're doing it twice, it won't work. So think of a morning paper and an evening paper. In the morning, in the first half of the day, one of the papers is getting most of the load, and in the second half of the day, the other paper is getting most of the load. So you can put them together on one machine, actually, and they'll even out over the day, but if they both get the load over the entire day, you can't do that. So you have to be a bit careful and in terms of overcommits. Another thing is we want to consolidate resources. So say you've got four old machines and they are drawing power and you don't actually want to buy four new machines to just move things over. So you're buying one new machine and put all the content of the four old ones on it. So it's just going, it's just moving forward because we just have too many resources these days. Another thing we want to virtualize for is delegation of administration. So what people had like a decade ago was they had one server and there was DNS, there was mail, and there was web on the same machine. So actually this is usually what three different people are doing and they want to manage their service. So you don't want to give them root and they'll, well, mess up with each other's services. So you put all three services in a different virtual something and everyone can have root or super user privileges for his own, but they can't really mess up with each other anymore. This actually also adds up to security because if you have a bad CGI script, well, and someone breaks into your machine, they can't actually get to your corporate email anymore. So if you're thinking of, well, virtualization, there are lots of different, well, methods on how to do it. One of the oldest and probably simplest is OS access control, like Unix users. We've got different users on a machine, and they are all running, well, in parallel. They're using it. For OS virtualization, things like FreeBSD jails or Solaris zones are there. And if it's getting more expensive in terms of, well, not so efficient anymore, it's going to be hypervisors like Xen or something. And if you really need, well, full virtualization in a thing that there must be no interaction, you get a physical machine. So let me take this off. Okay. But if you think about those things, there are trade-offs between them. Say, for FreeBSD jails or zones, you get full scheduler integration. It's really efficient. And it's a lot more efficient than if you're using a hypervisor. But actually, you cannot really do easy migration between instances or between machines anymore with jails, but you can really do this with, say, VMware. So there are trade-offs that you have to consider and to pick the right one. So I'm going to talk about a bit more about jails because this is what this is about. And as you can see, the history of this is, well, we're really going back last millennium. I usually put in the VMware workstation one date to give people a rough idea when FreeBSD jails had been started because you can see it's about the same time frame both things were released. So in 2002, Markus Sack had presented something about the virtual network stack at BSDCon Europe, which actually gave people their own network stack together with jails rather than just the IP addresses. And it took us quite a while to pick that up, and NLNet and the FreeBSD Foundation helped to bring it up from FreeBSD 4 to head, and integration started 2 years ago at BSDCon, where developers had been talking about how to get it into the tree. So what are jails? So jails is one of the operating system level virtualization. Actually, it's the oldest open source operating system virtualization we are aware of. What does it mean? It means we have one kernel, but we are running a lot of user spaces on top of that. So jails were a combination of shroud, IP address subsetting. You could give people super user privileges inside jails, but they still couldn't do everything. For example, they were root inside the jail, but they couldn't reboot your machine. So there were restrictions. It's fairly efficient, and it's one of the things that allows for overcommits because you can fire up a lot of them, and they are not going to cost you anything if you're not using them. So you always can have the people, well, abuse your system and and the ones you don't need, they are just around. Yeah, it's very lightweight, so there's no hypervisor or any virtual device support included there. And over the last couple of years, we went from the single IP that you had to multi-IP. We added support for binding a jail to a group of CPUs. And we can even mount ZFS from inside a jail these days. So if jails are working basically great because they are lightweight, they are fast, they are secure, and fairly simple to manage, why do we want to, well, improve things, or why do we want to change things? Well, one thing is because users still want more features. So the common case is ping doesn't work inside a jail unless you tune one of the global options to allow raw IP sockets, and then they basically can do anything. We don't have loopback addresses. And the PostgreSQL people usually complain about, oh, system VIPC is not really working, unless, again, you flip a global switch and all jails are seeing each other. Jail itself does not depend on any hardware support. So you don't need any fancy new processors or, well, you can just use your old Spark or a PowerPC and it will just run. So we want to keep this. And why is the IP address thing or the system V thing actually a problem? Well, jail wasn't a real virtualization technique. Whatever you did is you configured it on the base system and you kind of applied a mask so that inside the jail you were only seeing and getting access to specific things, but you didn't get your own things, your own copies of them. So another thing, well, we cannot run Windows, for example, on jails, and we are probably not going to change that. But if you want that, use a hypervisor. So the two things that people wanted was a network stack. They wanted firewalls. They wanted IPsec. They wanted to be able to ping. And the other thing was they wanted to have IPC. So we went on to virtualize the network stack as the first thing, mainly for two reasons. There was demand for it, and there was a working prototype that was known to not cause any performance regressions. So that's why we started with that. If you're going to virtualize a subsystem, like the network stack, you have to take care of a lot of things. So for one thing is, you have your global state in the base system where you say, for example, I want IP forwarding, or I have those addresses that are there, and you need to virtualize that. So all the global variables in your network stack have to be virtualized. You regularly have timers or event handlers, and for those, you have two strategies. Either you run them once for all instances, or you're going to start an instance, a timer for each instance. When you have your global state, you actually want to modify it from within the virtual instance. So you have to take care of the syscontrols and say, okay, everything that belongs to the network stack is what you can modify, but you're still going to see all the global things, for example, about VFS and all those kinds of things. You may see them, but you are not allowed to touch them. Another thing you have to take care of is startup and shutdown. So how do you bring up a virtual instance, and how do you tear it down again? And the thing that is usually forgotten is debugging. You really want to have that in the process that you are moving along as a developer, because otherwise it's going to be painless. Painful. So how do you do that? Basically, you define something we call a virtual instance, which is a bit of meta information and the global state. So you replicate the global state for each instance. So you're doing a copy, basically. For timers and event handlers, as I said, you either multiplex them or you duplicate them as well. Then you'll have some resources, like in the network stack, it's interfaces or sockets that you have to say, you belong to this instance. You need to do this basically because that's your entry points into the stack. Either you're getting a packet in from the wire, or there's something coming in from the user space, and you really want to say, OK, this is belonging to this virtual stack. Else, you get the packet, and you'll have probably 100 network stacks and don't know where does the packet belong to. If you are virtualizing what you have, it's important to keep in mind that security is an issue. So just because people have a virtual network stack now and can do things like, for example, run TCP dump or whatever, they must not be allowed to do other things. Think of a wireless interface. So the physical interface may belong to the base system, and you might have different WLAN interfaces in different instances. So who might actually change the radio? Well, none of the virtual instances probably should, but the one who actually owns the physical interface. There's another thing that you have to care of. It's easy if you're going to, talk to the outside world, but once you start talking on the same machine, you are going to run into problems. This is basically because we are holding logs to synchronize state and all this. And for example, if you're calling into an input path, you're calling into an input path from the output path. You're going way down the stack, hold a log, and just go up the stack again, and you want to grab that log. So you can't do that because you're probably waiting on yourself forever because you can't get the right log. So you need to put something in there that actually queues things. You release the log, and something else gets it out of the queue. So for packets, we have the NetISR that is doing that. Yeah. And I'm going to talk a bit about how we are doing starting and stopping later. As probably the last kind of technical thing, I want to give you a short idea how this is working in FreeBSD. And this is kind of needed to understand the overhead that is attached to the concept. So what you normally have if your kernel is, you have your kernel, and I have two simple variables in here. One I called question, and one I called answer. And answer is statically initialized. And, this basically means that process is running in user space. So what we are doing for the virtualized kernel is that we are tagging the global variables for the network stack. And the symbols are getting a prefix so we can identify them. And we are grouping them all together in a linker set that is going into an ELF section. So if this doesn't say anything to you, you can think of a group of all the variables, and you can say, give me all the variables for the virtual network stack. So we are going to use that set of variables that we have here as our master copy for all the stacks we are going to bring up. So, yeah, I'm trying to do that. Yeah, the problem is I have two of them, so. Better? Okay. Maybe. So, Maybe it's a cable. Okay, so we have the group of all the variables that belong to the network stack, and we are going to use that as a master. Yeah.
Stand still.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to use the mouse here.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. So we are going to use that as the master copy for all to initialize all the other network stacks we are going to bring up. So if we would be using this for the base kernel. So I'm going to host this. I'm not going to yell, but maybe this is helping. So, okay. So if we would use those.
Okay. It doesn't like to put your hand around.
It's probably a low battery.
Okay. I'm just going to ignore it, and we are going to hope for the best. So if we would use that set of variables for the base system, it would mean if we're turning IP forwarding on the base system, all new instances we would create would get forwarding being turned on, and we don't want that. We want the compile time defaults. So for the base, so I'm wondering if it's actually the other side. So for the base system, we have to create our first virtual instance. So how do we do this? We are allocating a bit of memory for the metadata, and we are allocating enough memory to actually hold the entire group of variables we have. And then we are going to copy them over into the just allocated memory. And we'll see that it's crucial for the design that they have to be in same order so they can probably access the right one. If we are thinking in terms of, well, we are going to access a global variable somewhere in our call path. Basically, we want to see, is forwarding turned on? So all the kernel knows is about those. It's going to hit those and check, is forwarding turned on? But that's not what you want. You want, is forwarding turned on here? So basically what we need to know is the offset from here to here for this virtual instance. And by the time we are going to access the variable, we are going to add the offset to the virtual instance and get to the right copy of the value we want. So to know the offset, we will have to know some, we'll have to have some idea about the actual virtual network stack we are going to access. So we have to set that during processing so that we get the right copy. Basically, we set it if a packet comes in through an interface or if something is working on the socket. And the thing is, as we would need to apply or calculate the offset we have for each variable access throughout the stack, well, we are doing the math once and storing the offset in the metadata for the virtual instance. So the entire runtime overhead to access the global state is actually to add the offset and nothing else. So this is basically like one instruction. And by the same technique, we can just fire up a lot more virtual instances we want. So I've got two processes here. The idea is processes are not virtualized. So the processes are not coming with the virtual instance you're firing off. But a process is attached to one of the virtual instances at runtime. This means you can have virtual instances without processes. So you can have virtual network stacks without processes. which is okay, because if you're only doing packet forwarding with some static routes, why would you need a process? The process is just going to eat up memory. So if you have your own code or want to help or just get an idea how it's changing FreeBSD. So you can see my two fictional variables, question and answer, again here. This is what you're used to. So when we virtualize them, we add the macro, which we call VNet define for virtual network stack define. And what this is doing is basically it says this variable is virtualized, so it gets the prefix, and it's put into this group of variables. And we have a second macro, which is only called VNet, and if we would, well, put the VNet thing into our entire code, we wouldn't need the defines. But we have evaluated that and decided putting the macro in all variable accesses is way too intrusive for the code and to read the code. So we stayed with the V underscore prefix for this. So what this macro actually is doing is it's taking the variable from the master copy and applies the offset to get to the right virtual instance you are in at runtime. This is basically the add for the offset. So for the syscontrols, you can see that the changes are similar small, as you only add the 5 letters of VNet here, and you will actually have to say here, I want the variable with the prefix, so that the framework, the syscontrol framework, later can apply the right offset, because at the time you define the macro, you don't know the offset. And for startup and teardown, it's a similar thing. So basically, all of the FreeBSD kernel, when booting, is using something called the System Initialization Framework, which is called sysinit. And it's basically an ordered list of events that we are going to fire off. So if you're starting a virtual instance, you want to fire those events for each virtual instance and not just for the base system. So you virtualize it by only adding the VNet prefix and you're done. So it's really minimal changes to actually virtualize code. So if the developers are done and you are a user, and what are you getting from that? So you are now getting your own loopbacks within jails with a virtualized network stack. You can use either virtual interfaces, there's an N missing, NetGraph interfaces to get any, data into the virtual network stack, because by default there's only a loopback interface as it would be for the base system. You can even say, I have a physical interface and I want to give it to this virtual instance. So say you're running your FTP server inside a jail with a virtual network stack, for example, and it's going to fill a 10 gigi pipe, so you can just give the 10 gigi interface to this and say, okay, I'm going to use the gigi for the rest. You'll get your own statistics, you get IPsec, you get the firewalls, and basically you get everything the network stack has. So it's all duplicated and will eventually all be there. So if you're trying to communicate between different network stacks, you can do routing, you can do bridging, you can run VLANs on top of the interfaces, whatever you would do if it would be a large setup with different machines. The only difference is it's still lightweight. So I haven't, said much about shutdown yet. Yes. So if you're rebooting a FreeBSD at the moment, you are seeing those nice little messages that it says, I'm flushing your data to disk. But it doesn't say anything about the network stack. So the reason for this is that the network stack was never actually, well, shut down. By the time we had the reset pin, something took care for us because, well, we rebooted and it was gone. So the point is we need to actually add destructors for a network stack. And what we had done initially was using the sysinit framework and running in a reverse order like we do on a module unload. But it actually showed that this is not enough and shutting down a network stack is way more complicated. So once are we completely done, or, well, where are we at the moment? And well, basically from where are we working on is with FreeBSD8, this shipped. It shipped as a highly experimental feature, and it has known issues. We've fixed quite some of them already, but not all. There are a bit of, well, older protocols that see rare usage these days are left to virtualize. And we've got the IPFW firewall, and there's a work in progress for PF to come, and we will need to do IP filters still. So at that point, I want to say thanks to the FreeBSD Foundation to actually, well, helping that we got unstuck, because basically when FreeBSD 8 happened and the trees were closed, the work stalled and we didn't really resume. So the current goal is to have it in production quality for in the 9 series. And if you're thinking in terms of, well, product development or anything, this is probably be going to 1.5 years from now. So if you want to start as well, it would be a good idea to do it, well, now. So this is a simple example of how a system could look like. What we have here is the base system. You've got your normal network stack. You've got your interfaces. You've got a few applications running on top of this. As you would do, say this is SSH and this is perhaps syslog, I don't know. So, and there's a second virtual instance. And you could probably run the FTP or HTTP server there. It's basically not different to a jail, apart from that you get the entire network stack. So, and there's what we call an ePair here. This is one of the methods you can use to get connectivity into a jail with a virtual network stack. So an ePair is a back-to-back Ethernet interface, basically. So at the moment, if you would get, or if you want to have connectivity in this instance, it would have to come from here and probably be routed from one of the physical interfaces. If you're going to take this one, because well, you want to dedicate it to your FTP server, as I have said previously, you can just move it in there. It won't have an IP address assigned anymore, and you'll have to configure it. But basically, you get the 10 gigi to one of the virtual network stacks, and the base system won't get anything of that anymore unless you're going to route through to the base system. So this leaves you with a problem that if you want to SSH in here from say, this is your management LAN here, like if you are separating those and putting the external interface somewhere, you would have to forward here, but you might not want to do that. So you can just plug in a bridge between the interface that is going to your management LAN and the ePair, and basically this interface will be on this LAN. So all the things you're normally doing with access points, for example, or with different VLANs, they are just going to work the same for this. And at that point, I have that firewall in here. You probably would want to enable it. So where can you use this? For developers and people who are working on network protocols and kinds of things, it's actually useful already. I've been using it, for example, to fix IPsec, IP compression, to test link layer things where we had problems with, because you basically can fire up a network setup that you would need 10 machines for and see how they interact. You can TCP dump. And you can even have D-trace probes running and see the events that are happening in different network stacks and how they correlate. And you don't have to have 10 log files anymore and then putting them all together. So this will actually be useful in case you're an operator system administrator and you have to debug things. Because all the tools you would have in a base system will be there and they'll just work. So people are already doing simulations of this as well. As basically, you can fire up 1,000 of nodes and then probably run routing. Say you want to test routing protocols and how they converge and all those kinds of things. You're setting up an arbitrary network, and you could actually remove a node on the fly and add news and see how things would work and how things would react and how this is all going. But the point where FreeBSD jails are usually used is with hosting companies. So they like it because they can run like 1,000 jails on a machine for 1,000 of customers. The interesting fact here is that the overhead for a jail, if you're going to use some tricks, some techniques, well, this is what we have, but there could be others, like NullFS mounts or ZFS, the overhead on the file system side is like 2 megabytes of per instance configuration data. It's like etc. So if you want to fire up 1,000 VMwares, you probably have a minimum footprint for the installs of 250 megabytes or something. So you can't do that on a single server anymore. And people will still have the possibility to get super user privileges inside that. But in addition to what they could do before is they can actually configure their IPsec, their firewalls, and whatever themselves. So another thing for people who are going to migrate to this is the classic jails still exist. So you can just mix those things. And another thing that is in there is jail hierarchy support. So you could probably give someone a jail with a virtual network stack, and they could start their own jails if you allow it, on top of that with the classic IP restrictions, and say virtualize their different services. So I've got a few numbers to give you a better idea about this. A classic jail was like 5K of memory. So this is really not much. You can't even, get VMware or anything into memory for that. A jail with a virtual network stack is like 300 to 500K. So it's a wide range. And that's basically depending on what features of the kernel you're using. So if you compile out IPsec and flow table, for example, you go down to the 300K. But if you're adding more features, the set of global state, the things that we have to do with timers, event handlers that we are allocating, and all this is going to add up. So, but if you're going by this number, or even if you're thinking 1 megabyte per virtual instance, this is nothing you can get with any of the hypervisor setups. So we can give you 6 nines. This is, it sounds good, but it doesn't mean we can guarantee you 99.9999% of uptime. This is actually 1 million minus one jails that you can start on a machine, which is an arbitrary limit we have inside the kernel. You won't have processes in them, and you can't really make use of them, but we can just fire them up. And I put that number in there to give you an idea how lightweight this really is. So if you're going to add a virtual network stack to them and some virtual interfaces so that connectivity works, you can easily get 5,000. And when I did that, well, when I looked at into this, we were still allocating a lot of resources we didn't actually need. So I wouldn't be surprised if the number is actually the four times higher these days, so that you can probably get up to 20,000 if you don't need processes. How many you will get really depends on your environment, because processes will add up to the number, well, to the memory. But boxes are growing, and we are going to see probably 3-digit cores and equally enough gigabyte of memory. So this might not be a problem in the future. So if you want to try it out, as I said, it's in 8.0, but actually you want to try 8 stable to get all the fixes we've done since. Or you want to try current if you're really adventurous. We try to keep it the same and keep them in sync, basically, for this work. To give it a try, you will have to compile your own kernel and turn on options vimage, because if you don't do that, everything is compiled out, and you just get the standard kernel with the standard base system and nothing else. So for those people who actually started a shell in the past, you might know a command line similar to this. It's gotten a bit more flexible since, thanks to Jamie. And basically, this option here that says VNet means I want my dedicated network stack for this. I'm creating one of the virtual interfaces, and I'm using ifconfig to move one of the ends into the virtual instance I just created with the name foo. And then I'm jexec in, but you could also run the RC framework from there and fire up processes, Apache, whatever you're in there, and do this. So we've got some historical documentation on image, and we are planning to actually put a few scripts and more samples up there. And if you're going to give it a try, well, this is just, it's experimental, so you've been warned. I know people who are actually trying it in production already, but this is a bit adventurous. So to summarize this, for FreeBSD, virtual kernel subsystem virtualization is finally coming. And once we are done with virtual network stacks, we'll probably have virtual IPC soon as well. It's, well, compared to 8.0, things are a lot more stable already. So if you want to give it a try, it's really worth it. As I've shown, there is close to no performance overhead because you only have the offset addition, basically, at runtime. And for FreeBSD, it just means that we are giving you more options to use in addition to Jails, in addition to Xen or VirtualBox. And it just adds up, well, nicely. And it'll be coming, well, soonish, as I said, probably 1.5 years from now. Hopefully. So once again, special thanks to the foundation for helping at multiple times. If you're interested, we really like to know your use cases. We really want to know how you could imagine or what you want from us if you're going to use this. Well, if you want to use it, but you have no idea what to do, we will have ideas how you can help. And, well, this isn't the end, because I see that even though we started late, we are having some more minutes, and I'm going to show you something. This is a very simple demo layout that I'm usually using to test the basic functionality at the moment. So I've got my base system with an interface, and I'm firing up 3 virtual instances that I'll, well, name left, center, and right. And I put the e-pairs in between them and start forwarding. And so we'll see if this is going to work. So there's one thing. Yeah, there we are. There's one thing that's upsetting my laptop, and that's not the image, but it's crashing on X from time to time. So I hope I'm going to get this through. So I showed you the command line to actually fire up virtual instances. The minus E is telling me, give me the shell ID that I probably won't need because I'm going to give it a name. Minus C means create one. VNet meant create. Give me a virtual network stack in addition to a classic shell. So I'm going to name this left, and I'm going to give it a host name that is left example net. And I'm going to say persist. So a persistent shell is something is a shell that doesn't go away, but doesn't have any processes at the moment when you create it. So it says shell ID 3, and well, there's a lot more options that it would have, but we don't care about this at the moment. So I'm going to fire up the other two, which is middle or center and right. So it's all free now. So I'm going to jexec into, well, let me do right. Less likely to crash. So I'm in right now. And if I'm doing an ifconfig, I have the loopback interface, but nothing else. If I'm going to run syscontrol minus A, I'm just getting the entire thing. To actually play with this, I'll have to create the virtual network interfaces that we can put into the instances so they can communicate with each other. So it's ifconfig epair create. This is one, and this is a second one. So epairs get the usual numbering for cloned interfaces, so 0, 1, n. And they'll have an A and a B. So if I'm going to run ifconfig in the base system now, you will find the four interfaces we just created here. So I'm going to, well, let me put it up. The first one goes into left. And this, so it's gone now from the base system, because here is there's no E pair A anymore. The second one goes into middle. And the similar thing goes into middle and right. So at that point, what I'm having is, what we just did is basically, if it's coming back, yeah. We created the three instances, and we created two interface pairs and moved them into the instances. So at the moment, there are no addresses or anything, but yeah, it'll come back. It just needs a second. But if I'm going to check right again as before, so the interface is there, and we can basically do what you would use, what you would probably do with the RC framework. You would put a configuration in there for this virtual instance and just let it be initialized from the RC framework. So I'm going to do it by hand at the moment. So yeah, right. Standard interface configuration. And as you might see, I probably want the .6 because otherwise it's going to be the broadcast IP. So I'm going to add a default route for the other end because my middle instance is going to do the forwarding and I want to reach the other side. So it's going to be a default gateway. So this was the right side, and we'll have to do it for the other two as well. Yeah, it's there. So So we've now configured the two outer the outer instances, and you can check the routing table, and you'll see you have the network there, your IP address, we've got the default route. And now to actually configure, well, the middle. We've got two virtual interfaces here, the one going left and the other one going right. And I probably should try to not mix them. So that was left. And this is right. So the fact that I can actually do it from command line isn't really because I've been doing it so often, but it's just a simple command that you're running, even if you're running jails by hand from time to time, you're doing nothing different. So by this time, we should be able to reach the middle one that we just configured from left. Yeah, it's working. But if we would go further through the middle to the right one, yeah, it's not working. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to turn forwarding on in the middle. So this is syscontrol net inet IP forwarding. So it's, well, let me get it up. It's currently turned off. And we're going to turn it on for this instance. So the middle one is now forwarding packets. And let me get to the right. If we check here, forwarding is still off. So we can be sure, well, the global state was just for one instance. And we can reach, that's the middle one. And that's left. So basically doing a trace route now. Oops. So you can see the middle instance and you're getting to right. So this is working. So in case you are running a hosting thing, you will actually find that FreeBSD or, well, open source now supports something different as well, and let me show you. Okay, so this is an older FreeBSD kernel of mine, but it's the FreeBSD. So So this time I'm not using persistent actually, but I'm using command. So I'll directly get into the jail and into a shell. So this is something else that's on my laptop, and this looks different. Well, it should, yeah, it says Intel Atom here, and well, it still says FreeBSD here, but I'm going to show you something. So some of you might recognize this. This is Debian. And this is Debian K-FreeBSD. So you can actually use FreeBSD to fire up 1,000 Linux instances if you want. And this is something they can't really do themselves at the moment, I think. So, yeah. Yeah, it's an older snapshot, but This is on FreeBSD. This is inside a jail. This is with a virtual network stack. Yeah. And this is not working. Yeah, might be out of sync at the moment. I have to admit that. So I guess a lot of people of you have questions. Yeah?
What kind of tools do you have to create thousands of instances of jails? Are you developing tools as well?
There's a new management interface for jails as a work in progress currently, because basically the RC framework isn't going to do that. What I'm using at the moment, if I'm doing this, is a shell script for development at the moment, until we have something different so we can really define, I want this setup and I want it all time. And yeah. Yep.
So you have processes that are associated with the jails.
Yeah.
Have you thought about the possibility of having an Uber process, if you will, that can talk into all the jails at once?
Like a hypervisor?
you can envision a CLI-like process that you want to be able to have a socket in every
Well, basically, you can do that, because you are just going to start up a thread and put it into the jail, and it will do whatever it's doing inside there. So, yeah, apart from that, well, it's just working, and it has been working for a couple of years now. So, yeah.
NetGraph
is just working. So if you say you want to do an L2TP concentrator or something inside a virtual network stack and send some sessions there and have a second one and send, well, sessions from a different customer to another one, you can just do that. NetGraph is working inside virtual network stacks just as you would do with a base system. So you get... Oh. Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not really using NetGraph much. So, actually, you should have the virtualized namespace, but I can't say for sure at the moment. I probably won't have NetGraph enabled at all. Yeah, and it says operation not permitted at the moment. So in theory, when this is done, it should work. It should just work as you would expect it if you have a single base system. But yeah, I'm not a NetGraph kind of person anymore. Yeah.
Well, my experience with this is that you should build the layer 2 and the NetGraph in the main host, and then move the
interfaces in. Yeah, that's. Yeah. This would work already. So, like I created the e-pairs, the virtual interfaces on the base system, and then put them inside a virtual network stack. So, this is going to work with NetGraph at the moment already, definitively. Yep.
So, you mentioned that system 5 IPC is yet to be done. Are there things that you would want to do to the scheduler to prevent denial of service?
Yeah. Yeah. You can imagine that it's probably going to be done. The point here is we can't do it all at once.
Right.
So yeah.
It's still on the list.
Yeah, it's still on the list. So what has been done recently is actually to generalize the framework we used for VNet, so we can more easily virtualize other subsystems. So IPC is probably easy enough that it could be done within a couple of something in between now. We've been talking about resource limits just before the sessions a bit. And yeah, we'll see how this is going. Basically, if we are going to add this, it's probably not going to be for the virtual network stack only, but well, for the general jail framework. So it doesn't matter if you're going to fire up a jail with virtualized something or a classical jail, you'll just get it.
Right.
and you'll be able to configure it. But that's future.
So I don't know if you're familiar with Linux containers. Is this roughly the same thing? And where would you say the...
Roughly the same thing with which one?
Linux containers.
Linux containers? I don't know Linux containers. So I know Solaris Zones and I'm... OpenVC.
Yeah, it's roughly the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of maturity, do you have one about the same state? Or?
Let's say OpenVC has some features for like suspension and migration, which this doesn't have. So I would say OpenVC is probably the one.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So, thank you for attending, and in case you have questions, in case this is interesting to you, let us know and talk to us, because at the moment it's too few people to actually, well, moving on. So everyone who's using it or testing it and either has panics or success, we are interested. Thank you.